listening to OWW Radio.
The official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And you sense what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. It's the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we have on as a special guest, Edward Laredo from Over the Top Rope Radio. How are you doing this week, Ed?
I'm doing pretty good, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So last week on your show, which can be downloaded off Blog Talk Radio, and also there's a direct link on angrymarks.com, Over the Top Rope Radio. Last week, I believe you had one of your highest listened to or highest downloaded shows with Dave Meltzer, correct?
Actually, it is now by like over 500 downloads, the highest downloaded show that we've ever done. And it's just amazing that, you know, Couture and Craig kicking that off, and we just explode. And they're coming back next week, so I expect next week's show to go back down in the dumpsters.
So, other than your two co-hosts, Craig and Couture, taking the night off, what would you attribute the Dave Meltzer show being one of your more downloaded shows?
Just having Dave on, you know, everybody wants to hear Dave talk, especially we got a lot of classic wrestling talk in. We got Japan talk in. Stuff people like to hear a lot about that they don't really get to hear on the shows with Brian because they mainly cover the current stuff. And so just that. And also, I think some of it had to do with we had a week off. So I think people might have gone to the site to see if there was a new show and just decided to hear that show again. So that might have had something to do with it. But yeah, it was very it's awesome knowing that many people actually tune into this is what I have to say. Because I don't know why people bother sometimes, but it was a great show. I mean, I'm really very proud of that show. I mean, Dave was awesome, and it's just a really good show. And tonight we go the total opposite way, and later tonight Craig and Couture are still off, and I'm being joined by my ex co-host, the Beach Machine, who can cause all kinds of havoc. And we're hoping to get some calls from people who were in Vegas with us over the past weekend. And basically, it's going to be more of an old drunk cast than Over the Top Radio this week.
So less wrestling talk this week on your show, a little bit more discussion about members of the Wrestling Observer website who met down in Vegas this past weekend. Ed and I were both there. And that's something cool that the members of the Wrestling Observer site do every year is that we get together a couple times a year, once at WrestleMania, once in Las Vegas. So it's going to be a lot of discussion about that. But generally, your show Over the Top Rope Radio, they cover sometimes historical perspective on professional wrestling and also some thoughts and ideas about the current scene too, correct?
Yeah. We'll cover sometimes when we don't have anything to do is basically when we'll cover current news stuff and have like just basically the current news stuff that's going on. Usually we try and have a guest. I mean, basically I'll put my guest list up there with, it's not quite Brian Alvarez's guest list because since he looks at the days, he's gotten some really good guests, but you know, I've had some pretty good guests over the years. So, you know, if anyone ever wants to go by, you can hear all kinds of stuff. We basically had everybody from ROH. We have a bunch of current WWE performers on, probably about half a dozen we've had on in the past. We were the first podcast to ever... I technically don't know because there's like thousands of podcasts, but more than likely, we were the first podcast to ever have a current WWE... Actually, two current WWE superstars appear on our show when they're not allowed to do like internet shows. And we do that, and also I think what our specialty is, and what actually, unless we have like a really big... guests on. Basically, our most popular shows are, we all kind of pick a theme, and we'll just talk about, like classic wrestling, or like, we'll do like WrestleMania reviews, or just like for different kinds of things that, you know, just different kind of shows, trying to make it different, and we do a really good job. Me and Couture, we know our shit, and Craig's always there to speak something up or forget something. So, yeah, it's a decent show. If you haven't heard it, give it a try. You might like it, you might not. But yeah, just to give it a try. It's a pretty good show as far as I'm concerned, but of course I am the host.
So on Facebook, you posted that you thought that, now if I get your quote wrong, correct me, but you compare Terrence Terrell and Gail Kim to this era's Kira Hokuto and Manami Toyota. Now, how much was tongue-in-cheek, and how much did you actually mean that? And Kira Hokuto and Manami Toyota are very accomplished, very legendary women wrestlers from Japan. And so can you kind of go into what you meant by that statement?
Just having some fun, because I knew people would actually take me serious and comment about it or something, but... No, I'm not. I mean, I'm just, you know, Gail and Terrence, I don't know how or why, but by some miracle, they're having some awesome matches, and I wanted to give them a little credit, and I just went a little overboard in the comparison. I mean, there'll never be any women that I could ever compare to Manami Toyota and Akira Hokuto. I mean, they're the best. They'll probably always be the best, and it was just a good reaction.
Certainly, this two-match feud has definitely brought quality women's wrestling to pay-per-view and television. Would you say they've been the best women's wrestling matches on a big stage?
On a big stage, because I'm sure if I can shimmer and shine, they'll have some awesome matches that just not that many people see other than their clientele. But as far as the big stage, I mean, the last time you had matches like these was with Trish and Lita, and that was... quite a few years ago now.
Now, is this something that you think could possibly... I think, you know, we've seen World Wrestling Entertainment take cues from TNA. We've seen TNA introduce new concepts. We've seen WWE kind of take hold of those concepts. So obviously, creative members are watching TNA. Do you believe that this could maybe usher a change in World Wrestling Entertainment, seeing TNA present women's wrestling where they're having hard-hitting athletic matches?
Well, after the first one, they did have the AJ and...
AJ Lee and Caitlin.
Well, they let them have a good little match. I mean, it wasn't as good as Gail's and Terrence, but they let them go out a little more. After this match this past Thursday, we'll see what they do at the pay-per-view. I mean, they might let them actually get a little time and do something. But a lot of it has to do with TNA being able to keep it up. And how many matches, I mean, how many times can you really do Gail Kim and Terrence before it gets old? It's not like you could do it every week. I mean, I'm sure they could get a couple more weeks out of it, but it's not something that's long-term. So it might help the WWE women get a little more time, get to do a little more in their matches, but it's only going to be a short run.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the World Wrestling Entertainment kind of gets hot and cold on the women. Certainly right now it seems like they enjoy the AJ Lee Caitlin storyline. But I mean, there's a lot of women who are left on the back burner. It's just a product of the fact, I mean, they have, this Sunday is the big World Wrestling Entertainment Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And they have, is it 10 or 12 people between the two main events? And that's a lot of television time that both sets of Money in the Bank matches require. Also, you have the heavyweight title match between John Cena and Mark Henry that requires time. So you see a lot of time sucked up by a lot of these major card acts, to where the lower card acts and the women kind of get slighted. That's to where in TNA, seemingly they always make room for them.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, they might, let them go out there for a few times and try and take some ass, but it's something that they're going to let last, because there's no, sooner or later they're going to have to get the time cut or something, just because of how everything goes. I mean, look at all the stuff in WrestleMania. They do America the Beautiful, because they time everything so perfectly now, and it's like, it might be good for a few weeks, but, it'll go back to being normal, pretty soon.
There's 12 people, 13 if you include Rob Van Dam, who, while he's got plenty of segments on television, hasn't had any actual time on television. And so that was a lot of people. They have the Shield, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns versus the Usos, as a kickoff pre-show match. So if that tells you how much television time gets devoted to a lot of these people, that should tell you, because the Shield's been one of the featured acts, at least since this year, since they debuted late last year. This past Monday on Raw, we saw a new act debut, being the Wyatt family. They had received a lot of vignettes leading to this big debut. What was your thoughts on the debut of the Wyatt family?
I thought all the videos were cool. I think, what's his name, Bray Wyatt. I think he's pretty cool. Brody Lee, I think he's doing awesome in his role. He looked good beating on Kane. The other dude, he's big, and he actually looks kind of cool and creepy when he's got that mask on, but that dude needs a lot of work. I mean, you can see the difference between him and Brody Lee. I mean, night was night and day when they were getting up a Kane. But, I mean, it's a different, it's different, and we'll see where they go with it. And, I like when they build characters up like that. Like, they built up the Shield, they built up them with all these videos. I mean, that's how you get people over. I mean, it's not like, okay, like when Colt Cabana first came out, right at the beginning of his first match, they showed a little vignette thing right in the corner, supposed to be funny. Well, maybe had they shown that fucking him being funny, like saying something funny for 10 weeks in a row, just in a little circle blurb thing like that, he would have gotten a little bit more over other than doing it the very first match he has. I mean, that's how you build people up, is by pounding it into people's heads with vignettes like that and making people want to and, like, be waiting for, like, come on, bring it on. And that's what they need to do. And hopefully that's the pattern they seem to be taking. And that's what they'll do with all these other new guys we have in development. So, hopefully they'll come up with some good idea for El Generico or Cassius Ohno or someone and just, just fucking push the shit out of him before he even shows up on TV. That's how they'll get some new stars out of it.
What's interesting is that in the 80s, that was kind of the way that professional wrestling was promoted, at least the World Wrestling Federation. I don't think it was really until the Attitude Era. We saw guys kind of do the cold debut and were kind of left to make stars of themselves after that. I mean, Jericho did that, for example. But it took Jericho a while to kind of claim the status that he eventually rose to. But in the 80s, I mean, you saw vignettes of guys for weeks and weeks before they debuted. And it's kind of interesting to see with the Wyatt family, that being brought back, and a lot of the talent down in Florida. I believe it was yesterday, had the debut of the performance center they built down in Florida. And you would hope that, you don't want a cookie-cutter method, right? You don't want every guy to have big vignettes when they debut. You want guys to debut different ways. But certainly the vignette thing is not something they used a ton. Fandango and the Wyatt family are two I can think of off the top of my head. I'd like to see it used more for guys. I think it helps getting familiarity with the crowd.
Yeah, like you kind of brought up the past, like, this is how good they were about pushing people in the past, okay? In Mid-Southern Wrestling, or actually there was no Mid-Southern, that was just after the next term, but in Memphis, Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee were going to have a Loser's Leave Town match. In Georgia, I think it was still Georgia at the time, or maybe it just changed to World Championship Wrestling, but they were showing vignettes of Lawler, because Lawler could possibly be coming to Georgia had he lost the match. And you know what I mean? It's like they're pushing a what-if back then. And that's how, they got people in Georgia kind of excited, And then, unfortunately, it was Bill Dundee. But you know what I mean? You push Lawler as a superstar coming in, so everyone was excited. So, yeah, the more you push people on fucking videos, the better it is for everybody.
I don't want to put words in his mouth, so I'll try to do this very easily. But Jim Cornette recently did an interview with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, and he, to paraphrase and to do a very loose paraphrase, this is not a quote at all, but I feel like what he was trying to get across is that professional wrestling now is not seen as being credible at all, and so people enjoy the backstage stuff because they know the backstage stuff is real. How hard do you believe it would be, like you said, the thought that went into Georgia actually advertised the fact that, hey, we might be getting Jerry Lawler because he might lose this Loser Leaves Town match, and Georgia makes sense for him to go to. How hard do you think it would be to treat the product differently to where maybe people did take it as real, or do you see real fake as not being a problem?
I don't think, I truly, honestly don't think it could ever go back to real, that people think wrestling's real. It's just too far past that. I mean, that was great in, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, up to the mid-80s, but wrestling's gone past that. There's no one's going to take wrestling serious. How can you take wrestling serious when there's UFC? You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I prefer wrestling over UFC, but, you know, it's like, wrestling's there to be a show, to be fun, where you can just forget your whatever and just go have a couple beers and enjoy the show and all the craziness and just, you know, forget yourself for a few hours. I don't think you could ever, I mean, I think you could feature matches, like look at what they're, you know, Brian Daniels getting over because he's having all these badass matches. You can have matches, but as far as it being people having to be like a legitimate feeling toward it, it could never happen. It can never go back to that way.
You know, I'll say this, is that part of the enjoyment that I get out of MMA, and obviously there's the analytical standpoint of breaking down how fighter A matches up against fighter B, but there's also the build to the fight where when a guy like Chael Sonnen, for example, or this Chris Weidman-Anderson Silva fight, definitely this rematch, which Wrestling Observer just posted that Anderson Silva did an interview in the 6-year reigning middleweight champion of the UFC, lost his title last Saturday to Chris Weidman. And he did an interview with GQ in Brazil and said the rematch would take place on December 28th, which would be their big...
Can I ask you a real quick question before you finish?
Yes.
Did GQ go to Brazil to interview him, or is there actually a GQ Brazil?
I would think that GQ has offices in a lot of big countries, not only Brazil.
Okay.
So Anderson Silva said that the rematch would take place December 28th. Dana White, Los Angeles, said he was meeting with Silva and his reps to work out the deal. White said the location of the show would depend on the date. And Weidman said in interviews with ESPN that the fight would obviously happen in either in December or January. So, and Dana White said today the match would either take place in Las Vegas, New Jersey, Cowboy Stadium, or Brazil. It would be dependent on the date they can get both the guys to agree on. So I go all the way forward to come all the way back to the point of that part of the enjoyment in MMA is not only the fact that the two guys are going to have a real fight, but it's also the buildup, right, Ed? I mean, we kind of get entranced by some of these guys and some of the trash talking back and forth, why it's important for fighter A to beat fighter B. And a lot of that stuff, Ed, is not completely based in reality, right? I mean, I think we know that as MMA fans that some of these guys may not, they hate each other going to a fight, but once the fight's over, that, you know, they're cool with the guy because, you know, they work together a lot. They may be analysts on a show together. They may want to train with each other. But when you're in fight mode, obviously you hate the guy. But it's not that they're working. Well, some guys, I do believe, kind of are working. But some guys, they're not working, but maybe it's not as real as what it is perceived by the fan base to be. What are your thoughts on that, Ed?
The ones that are working, they're the ones that are going to make money and have like fight people interested in, like Chael Sonnen, Biff Bean, Koscheck, even though he pulled out of his fight. They're the ones that know that are going to make money. Like UFC is so mixed up. You got all these guys who they don't want to say shit. They just all fight whoever they put in front of me. You know, they're just so stupid. They don't think they want to trash talk. It's like get your fucking self notice. Why do you think Frank Mir is still relevant? Because he talks shit. He doesn't want to fight him forever. You know what I mean? And Chael Sonnen, he's going to lose his streak, but he's going to keep getting major fights because he's Chael Sonnen. He's going to talk his way into it. And then you got these idiots that after they have these badass feuds and blood feuds or whatever, and then they're all buddy-buddy at the end of the fight. It's like, okay, if you want to show respect at the end of the fight, take the guy's hand, that's fine. But when you get all super lovey-dovey, people are like, oh, well, fuck you. You lied to me this whole fucking time. And that's another negative. I enjoy watching MMA. I'm fans of certain fighters, but right now, as UFC as a company, they're not my favorite company. Dana White's not my favorite president. And one thing about the dream match, it's going to be a good build, and it'll probably be a great fight. But just because I have issues with the company and the owner, I kind of hope they're stupid enough to try to go to Texas Stadium. And when they pull in a coffee cup crowd in that stadium, I'm going to have a big laugh. And I'm not going to say it's not going to make money on pay-per-view, but I hope they get some embarrassing number like 30,000 in that 100-seat arena.
Well, you know, Pacquiao only did 49,000. So if it does, I mean, what are your honest expectations of what UFC could do with this fight? Because this is being talked about as one of the biggest fights in UFC history. And
But the thing is, the people talking about it are MMA people. They're people in the know. It's me and you. We know about it. We belong to WrestlingObserver.com. It's all these people. The general public, yeah, the ones that saw the fight, they know. They might have said, oh, wow, Chris Weidman, yeah. Or the people who saw the news, they might say Chris Weidman. But you know what? He's still Chris Weidman. He's not a, he might have won. People might be saying he's a superstar now. He's not a superstar now. He's got to still make it from some people. Still don't know who he is other than that he just won the fight. So I don't see this giant. I can see them making money on pay-per-view with all the hardcore buying, but as far as selling tickets and at the prices they sell tickets at, they're gonna embarrass themselves if they try to run Texas Stadium. Like I say, I hope they do. I mean, they could do it in Brazil because you could definitely, I think, could do it a stadium like that in Brazil. I'll give them that, but I really do hope they try to run Texas Stadium, and I hope they look like fools when they do it.
Yeah, I think. If Pacquiao Margarito could only put 49,000 in there, I wonder what the UFC even realistically could put in there. Because Pacquiao is one of the biggest draws today, and that was the first time they had a boxing fight in Texas Stadium was Pacquiao Margarito. And I just wonder, you know, the fight, I saw a lot of coverage on it. I don't normally see coverage of UFC fights. I'll give it that. But no, it doesn't really feel to me kind of like this big transitional fight that I guess a lot of people are talking about it being. It seems like it is a lot of people in the world of MMA. So it'll be interesting to see what that story develops into. Now, Money in the Bank this Sunday, how excited are you to see this pay-per-view? Will you be seeing this pay-per-view? And what are your predictions on who could possibly walk away with the briefcase?
I actually am excited to see it because I actually do get to see it because I'm on vacation, so I'll be able to watch it. Usually I have to work on Sunday night. But I'm excited to watch it. I really don't have high, like, expectations. I mean, hopefully either Brian or Van Damme will win the Money in the Bank. That'll be good. As far as the other Money in the Bank, I mean, you know, maybe Cesaro would. If Cesaro would win, that would kind of make me excited. But, you know, John Cena and Henry, you know, it's not going to be a great match. You know, maybe they can pull out some smoke and mirrors and do something. But, you know, realistically, you can't really expect a great match. I'm just expecting, I enjoy watching pay-per-view. So, I mean, I'll enjoy watching it. But I don't really have any things like any groundbreaking things going to happen.
In Philadelphia, how big do you think the reaction is going to be to Rob Van Dam? Is he going to be one of the most popular guys on the show?
Yeah, he'll be one of the most over because they played plenty of vignettes for him. So, and, you know, he did have some cool music, so cool music always kind of helps.
You know, it's interesting that it's not that – it's like you know, when guys would jump back and forth from WCW to WWF, it was, I think, the anticipation of seeing someone in a new environment, right? Because when Lex Luger jumped, for example, Lex Luger was in the upper mid card team with Davey Boy Smith at the time, but he was a featured act. And it was interesting seeing him go back then and interact with the Flairs and Stings, guys he hadn't interacted with in a few years. Same with Kevin Nash, for example. You know, you can see him interact with a new crop of stars in WCW at the time. But Rob Van Dam, I don't think it's that at all. I think it's literally there's been a large part of the fan base that haven't seen Rob Van Dam since he won his match against Randy Orton. And they're going to see him again for the first time in a few years. And it's not like – I don't think it's the same feeling. I don't think there's a large group of fans that knew he even went to TNA.
Yeah, you know, because – TNA only has their 1.1 million that watch them. So, I mean, there's a lot of wrestling fans that just don't watch TNA. So, it's like it didn't happen. You know what I mean? That's why the WWE doesn't. They might do something TNA does, but they don't talk about TNA because it's irrelevant to them, to their audience.
So, Money in the Bank is this Sunday. Next week, TNA is doing a so July 18th, Impact from Louisville, Kentucky will be Destination X, which used to be a pay-per-view, but this year, because they've cut back on the pay-per-views, this will be a live television event. And Chris Sabin is wrestling against Bully Ray for the title. Homicide, P. Williams, and Sanjay Dutt will be appearing on the show. It'll be Louisville, Kentucky, I believe, in the OVW Arena, if I'm not mistaken. So that will be a big show for TNA on television. With their pretty consistent ratings pattern, do you think this will gain any additional interest?
You know, they never really get above that 1.1. I mean, you know, and honestly, I did watch the show, and I really didn't think, you know, it was a good angle, but it's not like they really pushed it as something super, super special. So, yeah, it'll make maybe a slight difference, but in the long run, it won't be by much, you know. I don't really see TNA ever being able to do anything that gets them any higher ratings.
It's certainly very difficult. I'll say that it's certainly very difficult when you've had years of, they brought on Vince Russo, which, you know, if he was fresh off, you know, it made sense when WCW brought in Vince Russo, because Vince Russo in a lot of ways had led to the change that brought it. I mean, he definitely changed the product, right? Because you can see in Vince Russo's booking how he changed the World Wrestling Federation product at the time. But then he didn't really work in WCW. So every time he's been given a chance after that, it hasn't really made much sense to me, because he didn't work in WCW. His ideas weren't very good past a couple of weeks. And you went so long with Vince Russo that you've put yourself in the situation where you are now, where it's incredibly hard to gain interest in your product. Because what would happen was, as you know, they used to have spurts and interest. Like, people after the lockdown pay-per-view each year, they would check out the product. The Joe Angle match was able, the cage match in lockdown was able to get a lot of interest. But then they always lose interest because the shows didn't carry over. So now they have a seemingly good staff that put together okay shows. I don't say they're blow away. They're okay shows. And they can't get a foothold because they've burned the ground, is my opinion.
Well, you're giving Vince Russo too much credit as far as his WWE run. He was being filtered out by Vince. You know, Vince was the final say. He just took some of the stuff. He gets way too much credit for that. And unfortunately, that's led to him getting job after job and not being able to do a damn thing about it. But for some reason, it's just he's going to be back, dude, sooner or later, somewhere. You know, it took, like, if you look at the NBA, how many of these fucking coaches who get fired, who suck, are not proven winners, they always get a job in a year or the next year? You know what I mean? It's like, they can't, it's very rarely do you have new guys. I think this year there's a few new guys coming out in the NBA, but very rarely, you always get the same retreads and the same thing. And you know what I mean? And that's kind of like how wrestling is. It's, they'll go back and hire the dude that sucked before because they just don't know what else to do.
You know, Vince Russo, he did have an impact on World Wrestling Federation programming at the time. I kind of feel that's almost undisputable. I mean, I'm not saying he was the guy who was running the ball in the end zone, but, I mean, it was certainly a collaborative effort. It obviously was funded by Vince McMahon, but Vince McMahon has been the constant, and seemingly when Vince has a lot of power, seemingly things are slow to change. And when Vince Russo was brought in, the product changed greatly, and part of it had to do because it had to change, right? Because what they were doing wasn't working as compared to the WCW product. So they had to change, but Vince Russo was there during the change, and Vince Russo in that administration certainly had a lot to do with – had certainly stuff to do with their success. But unfiltered Vince Russo doesn't work. Can you agree to that, or –
I'll agree to that. I mean, he had his part. I'm not saying he didn't have his part. I just said that you were kind of overplaying it. But he did have his part. But if you listen to Vince Russo, he'll say it was all him. And he's conned other people into believing it was all him. And we've seen the after effect of that.
You know, what's interesting, though, is that a lot of people, Vince McMahon doesn't do interviews, right? He's not going to go on your show or my show tomorrow and let him interview him, right? And that's actually kind of unfortunate. I doubt he would ever do art, but he doesn't let anybody interview him, right? Except for about what's coming up, upcoming shows. But that's kind of the benefit for anybody in the creative staff, right? Because you or I can get a job on the booking committee, and then you and I can have separate ways or get fired or whatever. And you and I can say kind of anything we want because Vince McMahon will never come out publicly, right? I mean, you and I can say, well, I had such and such idea, but Vince won't let me do it or whatever. Or I had, you know, I did this, but Vince never talks, right? So seemingly they can just say whatever they want, right?
Well, you can use David Lagana as an example, kind of. You know what I mean?
I didn't want to say any names, but...
Well, I'm not saying that in a negative term. I'm just saying he's a guy. He worked for the WWE. You know, when he was out, he kind of was outspoken about it. He was also outspoken about stuff plenty of times. And now he's a writer, TNA, and, you know, he don't hear too much. He knows not to... Now he knows, he's, you know, not to say anything. And if he ever parts ways with TNA... He'll bring back his website, and he'll be, you know, making real funny commentaries and stuff. I mean, you know, he's a funny guy. I mean, he's a guy who I believe should have a job. But like I say, it's like he parlayed his job from WWE into, you know, ROH, TNA.
And with that being said, that'll be the final point, well, unless you have any other questions for me.
Yes, we got to talk about how I destroyed you at Kiss Mini Golf and how you were the big loser out of everybody at the F4W convention.
Yes, every year the Wrestling Observer website heads down to Las Vegas, the membership of the website, and we headed down to Las Vegas this year. And Sunday, our second annual Kiss Mini Golf tournament in Las Vegas, I was the loser in the game. I golfed the highest score, which in golf, see, that's part of the problem. I didn't know that if you had the highest score, you lose. Because in everything else, when you have the highest score, you win. So next year, I'll try to get the low score.
Yeah. Well, I just remember how on one of Brian's shows, he was talking about how happy you were after you won your match at MMA. And I didn't see that. But fortunately for me, I got to see angry Alex golf after he was losing his ass off at mini golf. That was like one of the highlights. Was a trip for me, and I wanted to thank you very much for that.
Yes, as you brought up, I was third place at the novice, 210 pounds and over at Grappler's Quest. I won bronze medal. I was 2-1 that day, and hopefully I can compete in two more tournaments this year, Naga, and another Grappler's Quest in November, as I started training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in January. And hopefully I can compete more. And I suggest everyone to do that and to get out of your house and do stuff and watch pro wrestling, but also go live life like we went to Vegas and did ourselves. So with that being said, Ed, where can they find out more about you, your trolling Facebook post about Manomi Toda and Akira Hokuto being equivalent to Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell and such like that?
Well, you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or at Ed in San Antonio. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm going to tweet a whole lot, but you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. You can check out, you can go to angrymarks.com and you can find downloads and streams of our show at angrymarks.com. And you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Contrere for current downloads of the Over the Top Radio. And you can also go back to blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo for older episodes of the Drunk Cast and the Over the Top Radio. So check those out. It's a pretty fun show. Alex listens to it on a regular basis. And just check it out.
And don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for all the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, this is Alex, and next week I believe you'll be joined by David. But I hope you enjoy this program. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.